Good afternoon. Today is June 29th, 2017. We're opening our subcommittee on public safety, and we will open a work session on House Bill 2355. For a few of you, heads up, we are, for the most part, it looks like we're going to do the agenda in reverse order. If you've been paying attention and watching, my apologies for some of the confusion on work sessions and the changes. If you've been hearing murmurings about those things that were scheduled today, we do have a couple work sessions we will be doing tomorrow. Basically, paperwork was not ready for two of the bills that we planned on moving today. So, on that note, we have a work session on House Bill 2355 open. Oh, sorry, Ms. Nabirka, will you give us an overview of the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. House Bill 2355 relates to public safety. It requires the Criminal Justice Commission to develop and implement standardized method to be used by law enforcement officers to record traffic stop data, and it outlines the type of data that must be recorded. The measure outlines a time frame for law enforcement agencies to report their data to the Criminal Justice Commission. The Commission is required to review all of the data in order to identify patterns or practices, profiling, and report to the Governor, the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, and the Legislature by December 1st, 2019. There are two amendments before you today. I still have more to describe, so there are two amendments before you today. The A16 amendment is the committee amendment that provides appropriations and expenditure limitations. The A16 amendment provides the Criminal Justice Commission with $347,351 of general fund for two permanent full-time positions that will compile, analyze, and report on the traffic stop data. DPSST is required to develop and provide training and procedures to law enforcement agencies to facilitate the collection of traffic stop data by July 1st of 2018. That's also the date that the largest law enforcement agencies must begin recording data. DPSST is also directed to follow up with agencies to provide additional advice or technical assistance based on the reports received from CJC beginning on December of 2019, and to establish an educational program to be required at all levels of training that will be most effective in reducing profiling. The -A16 amendment provides DPSST with $431,330 in other funds expenditure limitation for two permanent full-time positions to develop and provide training procedures and begin preliminary work on an education program to reduce profiling. The Legislative Fiscal Office anticipates that DPSST will need additional resources related to this work once data is collected and reports are received from CJC that provide more information on traffic stop data issues and training needs. To develop and implement a standardized method for law enforcement officers to record their data and for CJC to use the data, the Oregon State Police, in consultation with those two agencies and the Department of Justice, will begin working to establish a data collection system, an IT system that's compatible with law enforcement agencies' current stop data recording methods. To accomplish this, the -A16 amendment provides the Oregon State Police with $780,418 of general fund for three limited duration positions to work on developing and implementing a data collection system. These positions are expected to continue into the first half of the 1921 biennium, at which point only one ongoing position will be needed to continue supporting the statewide data collection system. Due to the short timelines required for large agencies to begin reporting, the general fund amount appropriated to the state police includes $250,000 for a contract with a subject matter expert vendor to work on components of this IT project, including a business case and an official request for proposals. Finally, the amendment includes $750,000 in other funds expenditure limitation to OSP to fund a statewide data collection system. This money is a transfer from the Department of Transportation of Federal National Highway Traffic Safety Administration traffic records funds that's eligible under this federal program to fund creation of a statewide citation tracking system or software. These federal funds include a 20% state match, which can be accomplished through in-kind donations. LFO would like to note that the statewide data collection system is still in a preliminary phase, and actual costs of the system are indeterminate until formal requests for proposals are submitted and a contracted vendor is selected. The state police may need to return to the legislature for additional general fund resources if the costs associated with the statewide system are greater than the amount of available federal funds. So that's everything that's included in the A16 amendment. There is also an A14 amendment that modifies the definition of a usable quantity of drugs. The dash A14 amendment does not change the fiscal impact of the measure.
Okay.
How about if I make a motion for you?
That would be fantastic.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the dash A14 amendment to House Bill 2355.
Senator Steiner Hayward moves the adoption of the dash A14 amendment to House Bill 2355. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none. Are there any objections to the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the dash A16 amendment to House Bill 2355.
Senator Steiner Hayward moves the adoption of the dash A16 amendment to House Bill 2355. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2355 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Steiner Hayward moves House Bill 2355 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Why don't want all the motions now? Where are we?
We will stand at ease for just a moment.
You did all.
All right. We are back from being at ease. So at this point, we are open for discussion on the motion as to move House Bill 2355 as amended to the full committee with the due pass recommendation. And I believe Co-Chair Winters has some items she would like to put on the record.
Thank you, Co-Chair Stark. I just wanted to put on the record I'd received some communication from Kevin Campbell with the Oregon Association of Chiefs and Police and Oregon State Sheriff's Association, and he wanted to make it clear that they support House Bill 2355. Evidently, there had been some rumors and some things circulating around the building that they were not, and they wanted to make certain that we knew that they were. And it is a two-page document, and I would like to submit the letter that I received for the record so that it is clear and understood that they do support House Bill 2355.
Great, thank you.
Is there other discussion on the bill? Seeing none, I have a few comments. This bill is one that has reminded me that I need to make sure I represent my district and not just my own feelings and things. And I haven't run into anybody who actually is opposed to the profiling portions of this bill. My local law enforcement, my local elected law enforcement, are really struggling with the policy changes around the PCS portion of this bill. And so they have some fears or concerns about the ability to get people treatment early on and how this may or may not affect their drug courts. So today I'm actually going to be a no, as I represent my district. That being said, we'll wait for Senator Winters. I'll just kind of mumble for a minute as she returns. Is there any objection to the motion? All right, please note me as a no, and the motion having received the majority, so moved, and carries the full, and carries to the House floor. I'm assuming you want to, and Barker for the House floor, and I'm assuming Winters wants it for the
That's fine.
Senate floor.
You can always change it later.
All right, and again, my apologies that you guys have to deal with a moving target as we are consistently bouncing people and LFO staff from one room to another, so we are not doing what I said as far as the order. We are now going to figure out what we're going to do. So we're going to close our work session and open a public hearing on House Bill 2795. And do we have a sign up form on 2795? Wait, did I just say the right one?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
It's a public hearing.
What is this? It's in a different order on my sheet. not going to look at my sheet. I'll look at yours.
It's a court fee increase.
All right. You said go ahead and call me. You want to introduce me?
You could go ahead.
Okay. If we can please have Matt Markey and Phil Lemon up to testify. Come on up. We will not be moving this bill today. For those who are wondering, we're still waiting on the finalization of the amendments that I believe Mr. Markey is about to discuss. Take it away.
Either way?
Go ahead.
Yep. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Phil Lemon with the Oregon Judicial Department. The Chief Justice sponsored House Bill 2795 to increase filing fees. As you recall, during our budget process, we talked about the needs for the State Court Technology Fund to support the public-facing services, document access, and electronic filing. We have a new contract maintenance fee that kicks in this biennium. Okay. And so rather than ask you for general fund to support those things, we are increasing the filing fees. So that was the original bill. It would raise the A and Gross bill would raise approximately $3.2 million. And as part of what we hope to be a four-part strategy for funding these services, it now looks like it will be a three-part strategy this biennium. It's, I think, too late to get a state agency assessment to contribute to that, but we do have plans to get that on the table and before you for the 1921 budget. We are working to contain the e-filing costs. We are working with our vendor to provide a flat fee as opposed to a per envelope filing, and with the anticipated growth in e-filings, we believe that's an effective cost containment mechanism, so we won't have to come back and do this again soon. So I'd be glad to answer questions, but that gives you the outline.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Matt Markey representing the Oregon Collectors Association today in support of the Dash 5 amendments. My client tends to be strong users of the court system. Anytime we see fee increases, they're sometimes difficult for us to handle, but we think that the Dash 5s help that out. Several years ago, there was a fee increase for a foreign judgment that raised by probably close to 300% a few years ago. These amendments will actually reduce that fee by a little bit. It increases, in addition to that, a garnishment fee, which is something that my client collection agencies tend to file. And so while we understand if you reduce a fee, you need to make up that revenue. And so we do so with a little bit extra, actually, on the garnishment fee. The amendments also increase a prevailing party fee. Every time in my just over 20-year history of dealing with court fees, when we have increased court fees, we've also increased prevailing party fees by a similar amount. These are fees that help people in the court system recoup costs that aren't necessarily otherwise recoverable. There are a few other smaller changes. Some of them were not at my request, so I can't get through all of those, but happy to answer questions if you have any. Again, we would be supportive of the Dash 5s, and we are appreciative of the Judicial Department looking at different ways of cost savings on filing fees that currently they're having to pay with their vendor on their e-file system. So thank you.
Do we have questions? Wow, we're a lively group today. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else here that desired to testify on House Bill 2795 that didn't have an opportunity to sign up? All right, we will close our public hearing on House Bill 2795. Do I have to formally hold over your session? And one moment. So now we are going.
So is the only thing we can do is that one because I don't have paper to do this. So we well, I mean, we need him. So we could either stand at ease.
We're going to stand at ease for a moment to see how far away our LFO individual is before we decide to open the bulk of the agenda, which will be the 505. So we're going to stand at ease. All right, we will formally reconvene. We are opening a work session, not a work session, a public hearing on Senate Bill 505. I believe we have quite a list. A couple requests before we start going down the list is primarily, please keep your comments as much as possible focused on the fiscal portion of this bill. And we do need to keep it to roughly 2 minutes per person. I believe there was a long list. And so I'm going to be kind of timing, and I don't necessarily I'll probably give you one warning, but for the most part, just try to keep it short, keep it moving along. We have a lot of people to testify, and we have to be out of the room in time to allow another sub that's going to be coming in here. So on that note. I do have a timer that'll beat. Yes. Excellent. Well, Representative Williamson and Senator Prozanski, please come on up. And whatever order you would like.
I mean,
I just got done telling everyone they had 10 seconds each. No, I'm teasing.
All right. So, Mr. and Madam Co-Chairs and committee members, first of all, we want a clarification. My understanding, this is a subcommittee dealing with the fiscal portion of the bill, and that you want us to be limited to and be germane to that portion of the bill as to the fiscal cost. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That's what we just talked about a moment ago.
All right. So for the record, I'm Floyd Prozanski, State Senator, District 4, representing parts of Lane and Douglas counties, and I believe Representative Williamson will start off.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, Co-Chair Winters. Jennifer Williamson, House District 36, Northwest and Southwest Portland. I wanted to start off talking about a few things that I know have been questions around the fiscal in this bill. The first is that the Oregon Judicial Department will purchase and maintain all the equipment required in this bill. And I want to make it clear for the record that we're starting out with a three-county phase-in of this project. The full implementation will not be until July of 2019, but there is an allocation in the bill for the rollout at all 47 grand jury sites in the 36 counties. So it's less than $1 million to accomplish the purchase and maintenance of the equipment required in this bill for all of the counties before the end of the fiscal this fiscal year, but it does include the equipment for the rest of the rollout. In addition, there will be an allocation of special purpose allocation to the emergency board to be used at the Department of Justice if there's additional resources required by the district attorneys in the initial phase-in. So there will be the ability for a county or a DA, depending on how they end up using their discretion around this program in Multnomah, Deschutes, and Jackson County, to be able to ask for additional financial assistance in order to make sure that this is not an unfunded mandate, but that any additional costs are covered. So the bill allows for that. I know that for some of the questions that have been floating around this bill, we also have the opportunity in both 2018 and 2019 to make any additional policy adjustments that we need to make before the full rollout. So the recordation requirement will not start until March of 2018. So we have the ability, even before the initial phase-in starts, we have the ability to tweak any sort of policy we need to in February of 18, but then have the full 2019 session to do any additional changes to the policy before the full implementation in July of 2019. Thank you.
And Mr. Co-Chair and Madam Co-Chair and committee members, again, what we're attempting to do here is through a phase-in process to have a smooth transition into the use of recordation equipment. It is noted, as Representative Williamson said, this is going to be a issue in the sense of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court has been designated under the bill to designate which of the type of auto electronic recording devices should in fact be used, and as such, it will be the issue of the maintaining and the equipment, as well as providing the equipment, will be something that will come from the Judicial Department. It is also worth noting that this is a similar means that we use with the state police when it comes to intoxilizers. Intoxilizers are basically maintained and controlled by the state. They're placed at various police departments, jails, et cetera, where individuals are being processed for DUI and with an intoxilizer. And so this is a model that's been used. So it's not something new. It's basically being mirrored and using that same type of approach. And it will, in fact, give us the consistency and efficiency and I believe the ability to have the best buying power of having all of this being centralized and under one control. There is, in fact, as Representative Williamson said, some allocations for different departments or agencies to carry this forward, and we do believe that this is an appropriate means and ways to ensure that we have transparency in that process and accountability for those who may testimony that may differ from the grand jury to the trial jury. If the committee has more specific questions, we can go into that. But we do want to honor your time, that you have limited time, and that on the sideboards that you've given us as to discussing the fiscal part, not the policy part, which is already discussed in state judiciary.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So within the constraints the chair gave us, from a fiscal standpoint, regarding a lot of our privacy work that we've done, where we set up the requirements of storing information and disseminating that information, there are costs involved there. Along what the recordation is going to do and who's going to own the information, did we address the storage of that information, who's going to have control of it, and if do you think there are going to be costs related to maybe not public records requests in this particular case, but maybe requests from attorneys or whatever?
Sure. Co-Chair Stark, Representative Huffman, the way I think about it is the equipment, so the physical storage will be in equipment that is provided by the Department of Justice, and that the maintenance of the record itself will be in the control of the district attorney. So if there are additional costs, say for protective hearing or order hearings and the like, then we our hope is that we figure out how particular DAs use this policy and how often those are required. And that's why we're doing it in a phase in. So we'll have three counties to see what that workload looks like, and that's why we put the special appropriation at the Department of Justice for additional dollars to the DAs if it turns out that there is a heavy use of that process.
And also, if I could, Representative Huffman, the other there was a concern that has been raised through a piece of information that's come out regarding the cost of public record. I would call you to the attention that the way this is set up, if an individual wants to try to get a copy of the what the proceeding that took place in the grand jury for a non-true bill, that person must file the motion. That person is responsible for the cost of producing the transcript. And I want to highlight transcript as compared to electronic data. When working with law enforcement and their representatives, they wanted to ensure that you took the emotion out of what couldn't actually occur in the grand jury room when someone is giving testimony. And so for that particular situation, we felt it was appropriate and necessary to have a transcript instead of having the high volatile emotions that would be on a digital tape. And with that, for a public servant. And so for that, we wanted to ensure that the person who's actually asking for that to occur is going to be responsible for the cost of that transcript, and that the payment must be received prior to it can be released. So we think that there's enough checks and balances there to ensure that only those individuals are going to that are serious about it. Plus, the court has a obligation to do a balancing test before authorizing the release of that transcript.
Follow-up comment, because I may be called next door for another bill. So I want to get this on the record. And while Mr. Lemon is sitting on the back row, in the chief's list of judges, the original ask was for 10 new judge positions. Deschutes County,
nine.
Deschutes County was number three on that list. Mr. Lemon verified. Deschutes County is one of the pilot counties. And I just want to get on the record. I want to make it clear that the department has the ability to come in and ask the e-board to consider that Deschutes County position if this goes by way of preliminary hearings and puts an added burden on the court. It may not, but if it does, I want it on the record that Deschutes County may have a need there, and I want the body to be willing to hear that need.
Someone Other questions? Representative Barker.
Thank you. Senator Prosaski, so in order to take the emotion out, so we're going to take it out for public servants, but say an 18-year-old who was brutally molested and so on by an uncle or friend or brother, so now she's 18, but we're going to record that and hand that live emotional tape over to the defense. Is that correct? Not a transcript?
The way it is set up, co-chairs and Representative Barker, that is correct as to the carve-out here was for public servants. That is the request that came. What we have done in this situation, if someone is of age 18 and older as an adult, it's the perspective of the committee, and from my experience as a assistant district attorney in my days at Lane County, that those individuals are going to be required to give testimony in the trial, and we felt that it was important to ensure that they have that opportunity to give their testimony at the grand jury. The issue regarding how the information would be handed out or distributed is the same across the board, except for the public servants.
Coach Winters.
Yes, I want to go back to the three counties, Multnomah, Deschutes, and Jackson, and the issue that was raised by Representative Huffman, and whether in your conversation or have you had the conversation with those three counties that they actually, from a fiscal standpoint, believe that they can, once they get the equipment, handle this as a test as test counties.
I personally have not had any conversations with any of the individuals in either of those three counties. My understanding, there was reception to those counties moving forward. So I am assuming whatever concerns they had. I do believe that in the Dash 13s, it does in fact have a allocation for covering those additional type costs.
Thank you.
Senator Winters, I know that somebody reached out to my presiding judge in Deschutes County because she called yesterday, and so somehow she had been talked to.
Are there further questions for the senator or the representative? Seeing none. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, we're just going to go straight down our list and take it from there. First up, we have Lucienda Heights-Claibon. So I hope I didn't butcher your name. And Amanda Dalton. Remember, I'm in it. If you hear it beep, then you're hitting 2 minutes.
My name is Lucienda Heights-Claibon, and I am very concerned about this bill. The fiscal pieces of it, not only should there be a purchase of equipment, and then the maintenance of equipment, but there also, I think, is going to need to be some training in how to use that equipment properly. In my case, where I was wrongfully convicted, I had Swiss cheese. There were so many holes. It was almost like Watergate. It wasn't funny. And that should never happen. People should know in the proper recording, and this should be maybe even a workshop for all the DAs and prosecutors as well, but people need to know that everything has to be recorded fully so that it will be on the record. And transparency is a big deal to me. I would not have gone to prison with a proper recording. I would not have gone to prison if there had been a full, fair, properly done recording. I disagree with Senator Prosaski in a couple of other ways, too. I believe that people, the 99%, need to be able to have opportunities to have fairness in the justice system. And when you start making people pay the cost of producing transcripts, I was told for the case where I actually had my actual innocence proclaimed by a Washington state judge, where she criticized the Oregon system and the Oregon judges as not following the law, and the DAs for having tunnel vision. I was told it was going to cost me $8,000 to $12,000.
Please go ahead and wrap it up. We just
well, that kind of money is not possible when you have been devastated by a wrongful conviction, totally bankrupted in the process of trying to wait for justice to happen. And then you don't have the money to go back to a new trial that you've won because you don't have the money. You don't have the funds. You don't have $8,000 to $12,000 for a transcript. There needs to be a full recording of everything that ever happens in our court system. There has got to be, from the very beginning to the very end, no Watergate holes, no gaps, no excuses for why you didn't get close enough to the microphone or place the mics in the right spot, not knowing how to adjust your volume levels. But you also need
Thank
to have
you for your testimony.
Fair opportunities for free opportunities for transcripts for those who cannot afford them. Otherwise, and this is not...
We need to make sure we have fair opportunities for everybody to testify today. So we need to move forward. Thank you.
Okay. I think that $496 was a much better bill, frankly. Judges are preferred to DAs in making
need to move forward.
Transparent processes.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Stark and Winters, Amanda Dalton here on behalf of the Oregon Council of Police Associations, and we represent about 60 small and medium-sized law enforcement agencies across the state, primarily your line officers. I'll keep my comments specific to the fiscal because most of you have heard more than you would like from me on the policy. Though we did just see the amendments about an hour ago, I do want to say thank you to Rep. Williamson and Senator Przanski for removing the audio recording for law enforcement and putting in a written transcript. We feel that was a very important piece. The second piece that we've been asking for on policy that has an impact on fiscal is an insert of one sentence that you'll see in my written testimony that is included in the Dash 11 amendments. It provides that these transcripts cannot be used for as evidence against an officer or a public servant in a civil proceeding or an arbitration proceeding. As you know, the term public servant is fairly broadly defined. We believe it includes all public employees and that your departments of justice will have pretty significant civil liability as attached to a not true bill when a grand jury chooses not to indict a public safety officer or a member of a government employee. We feel that there'll be significant defense expenses around that. The second piece that's not addressed in your fiscal report is a fiscal report from the cities. It does mention counties being able to access emergency board funds. You'll see in the OCDLA testimony that they believe that 35 of the 36 DAs will move to preliminary hearings. Right now, most of our collective bargaining agreements include a four-hour minimum for overtime. A grand jury proceeding for a possession of a controlled substance can take as little as an hour and a half. If that moves to a preliminary hearing process and that hearing is now a day and a half, you are no longer paying that officer for only 4 hours of overtime. You're now paying them for a day and a half of overtime. And so we would ask that cities also have access to those emergency board funds as the test case rolls out, and just think it's an important missing component of the fiscal report. With that, thank you.
Thank you. Wow, 1 second to spare. Well done. All right, next up we have Gail Meyer and Sean McCray. Come on up and jump right in.
I've got my stopwatch up here. Ready, go. Co-chairs, members of the committee, Gail Meyer on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. This bill has been modeled after procedures in Idaho and Alaska, and what we know from speaking with prosecutors up there, crime victim advocates, trial administrators, it can be handled quite cheaply and efficiently. The two variables that might escalate the fiscal impacts are decision points that are solely within the district attorney to make, how many protective orders they might seek, and then again, whether they'll convert to a preliminary hearing. It's not the bill that would create the fiscal impact. It's their choice points. Right now, make no mistake about it, the courts are very burdened with our current operations. There are motions for access to grand jury records. The courts have to review them. They have to decide whether the defense should get them. In the middle of trial, you have to have delays to go get the grand jurors into the courtroom for them to read from their notes. If the access is denied, then that leads to a lot of appellate litigation. There's a case right now in federal habeas where they're still arguing that they should have received access to grand jury notes from a trial in 1991. So current judicial operations are very burdened with the fact that the defense does not have access to this grand jury testimony, and all of that will go away by way of this bill. With respect to the defendant's, the district attorney's choice point here to possibly go to a protective order, prosecutors in Idaho and Alaska don't file them. They just don't file them. With respect to Representative Barker, your concern with respect to emotions on voice, there's no reason why a district attorney couldn't seek a protective order and requesting as remedy that they be allowed to deliver only a transcript and not an audio recording. That's exactly what that protective order is for, to fit the remedy to the particular circumstances before the court. With respect to preliminary hearings, we've seen the district attorney's data of the percentage of times in which they'll go to preliminary hearing. If you study that data, you'll see it's hugely inconsistent one to the next. We wouldn't ask it to be the source point of any fiscal analysis. We think it's pretty disparate in its an analysis. A couple things, though, about preliminary hearings.
And we've passed our two.
All right, thank you. Can I make one point, just one point?
Quickly.
From the 70s and the 90s, or the 70s and the 80s, when they had preliminary hearings, within 10 days, 40% of those cases were resolved. That's a fast, expeditious procedure.
Representative Barker?
Just one very briefly. So, Ms. Meyer, we don't do the preliminary hearings a lot, we just do this, we're doing the test case. What is it going to cost to do it for all 36 counties? Do you have any idea what that's going to cost to do the recordings? I mean, does anybody have a number for that? I mean, I hear them talking about these contingency funds, and I feel like I'm playing three-card Monty.
Co-chairs, Representative Barker, from what I understand, the acquisition for the units, so there's 47 grand jury sites, so they want to, the proposal is to purchase 50 of these portable units, maintenance agreements, servers for all the, for each county. Each county would get two servers, as I understand it, one a redundant backup to the other. All of that equipment with maintenance would be less than $1 million for the 36 counties.
You probably don't have an idea, so it's maybe an unfair question. But I was wondering what the total cost, what it's going to cost the state once we have everybody up and running. What will the annuals?
Co-chairs and Representative Barker, the equipment itself is cheap. Variables are completely within the discretion of the district attorneys.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Sean McRae from OCDLA, co-chairs and members of the committee. I come to talk about one point, and that is I submit that SB 505 will promote expeditious negotiation of cases. I say this because as an attorney who practiced for over 30 years in state and federal court, I can tell you that in federal court it made a difference because we got grand jury transcripts of the witnesses. I know the prosecutors in our federal courts. I trust most of them. I like a lot of them. But I cannot, as somebody advocating for my client, the accused, rely on the prosecutor's point of view that a witness is credible and that the government's case is strong unless I can test that, because I can't provide my client effective assistance of counsel unless I know what the state or the government's evidence is, and I can advise the client based on what I see of that evidence. I can't do that in state court because I don't have access to grand jury recordings of the witnesses.
Do you think that would save us money, or will it cost us more money?
Senator Winters, members of the committee, I believe that would save us money. Because when I can sit down with my client, go through a witness's testimony, the client, the accused, can hear what was actually said, how it was said, and there can be an evaluation between the two of us of the prosecution's evidence. If it's good for the prosecutor, I'm in a position to say to the accused, look, we need to take care of this, and they have a basis beyond my word to do so. If, in fact, there are things that that person then tells me that I didn't know that I can go investigate, I'm in a better position to talk to the prosecutor and negotiate something short of trial without having to go through all the additional time, energy, and expense.
Thank you. Okay, next up we have Michael Slavaggio and Phil Lemon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Michael Salvaggio here for the Oregon Coalition of Police and Sheriffs. We represent line officers and sheriff's deputies around the state. We're opposed to the bill in this form. We have no particular objection generally about recording grand jury testimony and providing that to the defense, but we don't think that this particular bill is the way to get there. I first want to point out in the LFO recommendation that was posted on OLIS that you probably have in front of you, it does not include a public records provision or any reference to a public records provision in Section 3, Subsection 3. That causes us great concern because we just heard from the defense attorneys that all the cost drivers are on the side of the DAs, but if any member of the general public can institute a court proceeding and then a record release that is going to necessarily or possibly or probably involve editing, then there's a significant cost associated with that, and we have some concerns. It was referenced that there's a cost recovery process included in the bill. I'm sorry if I'm getting this wrong. I only saw the A13s mere minutes ago, but I don't see that cost recovery built into there. I know that there's a cost recovery option built into ORS Chapter 192, but that applies only to 435, 437, and Section 502. I don't see this bill amending any of those sections, so I'm really worried that the cost recovery actually doesn't exist in this bill. In terms of the LFO recommendation, again, it references additional costs to, let me see if I can get this right, the court, DAs, DOJ, counties, does not reference costs to cities, which, as we heard, if there's a preliminary hearing process, can be significant in terms of police officer overtime. In addition, the LFO notes generally that LFO notes this program will have significant roll-up costs in the 2019-21 biennium for counties. That's a quote. And my concern is that, like Representative Barker mentioned, I would like to actually know what those costs are so that we could see what effects we're actually talking about to local public safety budgets, because I would like to put on record right now that at this point, this bill is going to have an indeterminate effect negatively on public safety budgets, if I'm reading the LFO recommendation correctly. And if I may just make my last point, Senator.
Yeah. Very quickly, because then I have Mr. Lemon.
Then, you know what, I think actually Ms. Dalton's already gone over it, but I'll just emphasize that this will make more hours on preliminary hearings for officers. Thank you.
Mr. Lemon.
Madam Co-Chair, thank you. My name is Phil Lemon. I'm from the Judicial Department. OJD has no position on the merits of the bill. Chief Justice Ballmer has said, as I think you know, that courts will perform their duties under the bill, but those duties need to be funded and part of OJD's current service level as we move forward. We appreciate the legislature's careful approach in budgeting, and we also want to recognize the significant effort by both members and LFO staff in particular as we move through this process. So Mr. Board, Mr. Terpening, and your staff has done an amazing job working with us. We appreciate the 1.5 appropriation to the Judicial Department for the early work. And I apologize, we don't have a lot of detail about what is and is not in there. What it appears to us is staff is funded in the early courts through December. The equipment purchase for the early courts is funded, and we have an implementation position. Our concern is there's no funding for judicial officer time for any preliminary hearings or the protective orders in any courts. And so we will, if it's not possible to get that funding built in now, we would just, again, as Rep. Huffman said, we would expect to come back to an early e-board with some better estimates and information and ask for that funding. The last thing I would say is the A13 amendments direct the Chief Justice to designate and purchase and maintain the audio equipment. As far as maintenance goes, our intention is to purchase a maintenance agreement and provide that to the District Attorney's Office. We would not be on call for this isn't working and the dials aren't going up. We would kind of get that warranty for the equipment and provide that to the DAs, and that would be the extent of our maintenance obligation. So glad to answer questions.
Just quickly, have you communicated these concerns with Mr. Borden?
I've communicated them with Mr. Terpening and Mr. Bender.
And Mr. Bender, okay. Thank
you. And spoken to the members in the hallway after their testimony.
Thank you, gentlemen.
I'll follow up.
Next up, we have Kevin Neely and John Haraldson.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, Kevin Neely, representing the Oregon District Attorneys Association. You're going to be surprised to hear the Oregon District Attorneys Association oppose Senate Bill 505. We haven't looked at the amendments. They were just posted, as many have said, 2 hours ago. So we don't have a full understanding of what the issues are that we're confronting. I will tell you that we have three fundamental issues with the direction this is going. One, we do not believe that this is a broken system. This is a solution in search of a problem. We haven't heard that there are significant challenges to grand jury. The grand jury process, again, is an opportunity for the public to review the content of what the district attorney is doing and make sure that there is justification to move forward. We're unaware of but one case in which someone was specifically accused of wrongdoing. In that case, the district attorney was charged with a crime, was prosecuted and disbarred. Two, if grand jury recording is done, it needs to be done professionally. You have an opportunity here to do this right. And this feels like a hodgepodge. It feels like we're trying to do something to save money. We ought to find what the best practice is and implement it. And that almost certainly means the courts are involved in this, and you don't have DA trying to train a grand juror to turn the equipment on and off. That doesn't work for this organization. It's probably not going to work for ours. And three, and this is a fundamental issue for us, we have to find a way to protect the victims here. I'm just going to say that, and we believe the best way to do that is to allow officers to come in and testify on their behalf, as happens in the vast majority of states. So with that, I want a very quick quote from a Supreme Court case. The grand jury's power is only to accuse, not to convict. Its indictment does not even create a presumption of guilt. All that it charges must later be proved before the trial jury, and then beyond a reasonable doubt. The grand jury need not be unanimous. It does not hear both sides, but only the prosecution's evidence, and does not face the problem of a choice between two adversaries. Its duty is to indict if the prosecution's evidence, unexplained, uncontradicted, and unsupplemented, would warrant a conviction. If so, indictment merely puts the accused to trial. Everybody has the right to a fair trial amongst a jury of their peers. That is absolutely unquestionable. So again, you're making a tremendous investment here that is going to have no material benefit in stopping criminal behavior and lowering recidivism. Thank you.
Is Mr. Lemon still here? Just yeah. for the record, I wanted to note that the issue that you raised with respect to funding, I'm getting an okay to take care of that this session. Okay? Thank you.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Stark, Co-Chair Winters, and members of the committee. My name is John Haroldson. I am the district attorney for the Benton County DA's office. I am in my 11th year, and I started my career as a prosecutor in 1988 as an intern for the city of Albany. My perspective comes in large part from coming from a modest jurisdiction and to speak to the impact of the costs. I would submit that it is not that difficult of a task to truly study what the costs are going to be, not only at the state level, but at the local level. We have a responsibility to our citizens to do that so that we can create the best possible system. I don't believe anybody will debate that a digital recording is superior to Scrivener's notes. The question is whether the approach we're taking is going to be the one that is going to respond to the needs that we have. Now, some of the costs that we have not heard about, are direct impact, is what happens to the civil docket. If we are going to add on significant hours onto the docket, we're not going to add additional judges and resources. That means that you're going to have divorce cases, you're going to have civil cases that are going to get pushed out to a point, whereas we have heard in some jurisdictions that there have been challenges where lawyers will go as far as saying, I can't practice family law in this jurisdiction because our case can't get to trial. So those are legitimate costs that we have a responsibility to find out what they are. Number two, I believe many people know that I have a great passion with regards to disparities in our criminal justice system. And with that, best practices, evidence-based is central to what we should be working on. And understanding how we invest our funds, how does that truly impact disparities in our system? Whether we're talking about our treatment courts, whether we're talking about sobering centers, whether we're talking about the alternatives to incarceration that are going to make real change. And so I would ask the committee to consider those important questions with regards to the prioritization as it relates to the real cost.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Jeff. Oh, goodness. Lazowski. Excellent. And Steve Dole. Go ahead.
Co-chair Winters, co-chair Stark, members of the committee, my name is Steve Dole with Crime Victims United of Oregon. I'll make it as brief as possible. It is beyond Crime Victims United and the crime victims of this state why we are about to expend what ultimately, down the road, maybe not this year, but after 2019, will be tens of millions of dollars, to emulate three or four other states in the union who do recordings and do not protect victims. I am not amazed, not surprised, that Ms. McRae stood up here and told you, sat up here and told you, that she practices in federal courts and how they record, but she omitted the fact that in federal courts they allow for case agent to protect victims with hearsay testimony. She conveniently left that out. All of the states in the United States who record utilize case agent hearsay testimony to protect victims. All of them save for, I get numbers between 2 and 4. So let's go with 3. And I just don't understand it. What is the harm? Why are we not protecting victims? We're going to protect police officers. That's fine. I don't have any problem with that. But why would we be protecting the victims? It's beyond me. It's beyond me. And I'm beyond being angry about it. I'm just highly disappointed. I've been coming to this body for 25 years, and I've never, ever seen this go on with a bill before. I've never seen it. And I'm ashamed.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Co-Chair Stark and Co-Chair Winters. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jeff Lasowski. I'm a senior deputy district attorney in Washington County, which, as you may know, is the second largest county by population in Oregon. I've been a prosecutor, if you're curious, for about 21 years, and I've been presenting cases to the grand jury for about 16 or 17 of those years. For the past 5, I've been the senior deputy attorney in our office in charge of orienting, educating, and administering the grand jury process in our county. We have 5 grand jury panels that meet various days per week for a total of 35 citizens that are brought into our courthouse to serve a 5-week term. On each panel, one of those citizens, again randomly selected, becomes the clerk, becomes the scribe to take the notes that are currently required by statute. I'm the person in charge of overseeing that process and sort of training that person on how to take the notes and where to deposit them and so on and so forth. So I speak to you from the perspective of a person with quite a bit of boots on the ground knowledge as to how the current system works. I also try cases. I try major felony cases, and I have for the past 2 decades. And I can tell you that, for starters, one of the things that Ms. Myers mentioned to you is flat out inaccurate. And that is that there is a large amount of current litigation with respect to attempts for the defense to get their hands on grand jury materials. There is a little bit. It does happen occasionally, but certainly not to the extent that she would have you believe. Regarding the fiscal costs of this bill, I don't have a lot of personal research to back this up. I can just tell you what I know is going to happen based on what I know of how the system works. There are going to be a tremendous number of preliminary hearings. For reasons that have, I'm sure, been discussed before you in other hearings, almost all the DAs in this county are going to move a lot of their cases to the preliminary hearing docket. That's going to be a tremendous judicial expense and strain. There's going to be a tremendous number of police officers that are going to be sitting around courthouses all over the state waiting for their turn to testify before a judge, when, as the system is set up now, it can be done very efficiently. And then there are ancillary costs that people...
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
When you say that there will be a shift to preliminary hearings, is that because the district attorney would not like to do the new system? Is that a protest shift?
Absolutely not. And I'm not a policymaker, so I'm telling you what my understanding is.
Why would there be? We've got the three. As I understand this bill, it's to have three pilot counties to see how well things go or don't go. I'm kind of looking at that, but I really want to know why, if we're going to see an escalation of cost, which is what you're mm-hmm. suggesting, if we shift to preliminary hearings, and I would just want to try to understand why.
May I ask whether you're inquiring about why the shift to preliminary mm-hmm. hearings will happen, or why?
Because you're talking about an additional process in the system that will create more cost, correct? If we go
correct.
To more preliminaries.
But you're asking about the reason for the mm-hmm. shift versus the reason for the cost.
Yes.
My understanding is the reason for the shift, as has been explained to me by some of the elected district attorneys around the state, has to do with the fact that we as DAs don't want to be subjected to Monday morning quarterbacking, if you will, in terms of challenges, retroactive challenges to how we asked a question, or if the challenge that we didn't do something in an appropriate way, challenges that would take up yet even more time of the court to sort through and litigate, and could potentially subject us to things like our complaints that we would have to defend against. That's my understanding.
So perhaps the test counties will determine whether or not that's accurate or not. Thank you.
I suppose. Washington County is not a test county. I appreciate a few more moments, but I would...
We have to keep them brief because we do have to keep moving.
I was just reiterating what the police folks were saying about the anticipated cost of overtime. I can guarantee you that that will be an ancillary cost of what we're talking about. And finally, a silent cost that I haven't heard anybody mention is the cost to indigent defense. It's going to be malpractice for a defense attorney to not attempt to get their hands on these recordings or transcripts and study them and read them and attempt to utilize them as a trial tool, if you will. And that's going to add a lot more hours into the defense's need to prepare their cases. And it seems quite logical that maybe not this year or next year, but eventually the indigent defense costs are going to see an increase as well.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We
yes.
still have three more people to testify, and we still have another bill to work on today. So next up, we have Kimberly
McCullough.
Thank you. Sorry. And and Mary Sell.
Co-chairs Winters and Stark and members of the committee, my name is Kimberly McCullough. I'm here on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. I just want to let you know that this is one of the ACLU's highest priority bills this session and has been in past sessions. We think it's a worthy and important investment for the state. I will just let you refer to my written testimony for the policy reasons for that, but I just want to mention that, first of all, we appreciate that the system is set up in this bill to minimize cost, both by delegating the recording to the grand juror and also because of the potential cost savings of defense attorneys being able to understand the case against their client, be able to resolve those cases quicker and save court time down the road. In addition, we also just want to mention that we did originally support Senate Bill 496, but now support this bill because of the fact that it is a cheaper bill than the other bill, but still will function well. I did also want to just clarify something that came up earlier in regards to potential public records costs, and just mention that my understanding is that public records requests are not a concern here and would not make an additional cost, because the bill is very clear that this the grand jury transcripts are confidential. That is a stronger protection than a public records exemption. in a not true bill, they are not released at all, and except for in that public servant exception, and a judge would be in charge of determining if that's in the public interest. If it's a true bill, it will only be released to the defense attorney, unless, of course, there was a protective order. So there is no public records issue here that would cause additional cost. At that point, I'm just going to respect your time, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Senator Winters, Representative Stark, members of the committee. My name is Mary Sell. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. I signed up to testify simply because I wanted to address two thoughts. The first is regarding preliminary hearings. You just heard testimony that the district attorney's offices believe that they're going to move over to preliminary hearings rather than use the grand jury process. I have recently been a practitioner. I've been a lawyer on the ground in Washington County, in Douglas County, and also in Multnomah County. I was in Washington County very recently, and they have a preliminary hearing docket in Washington County. There is a policy in place in Washington County where I believe theft ones, ID theft, possession of controlled substances, criminal mischief, and a few others always go to preliminary hearings unless they have three or more witnesses. Then it must go to grand jury. They also save grand jury for serious felony cases. So that would be delivery of controlled substances, burglary, measure 11s, domestic violence. Those types of cases already are being used in or using the grand jury for those types of cases. In my experience, in the almost a year that I practiced in Washington County as a defense attorney, I never once had a preliminary hearing. I went to court for preliminary hearings. I sat in court with my client, reviewed the police report, spoke to the police out in the law enforcement out in the hall, and often the DAs would come up to me and say, listen, if you waive your right to have a preliminary hearing today, even though it's on the docket, I'll give you a misdemeanor offer on this PCS case, or I'll give you a better deal. And we loved it because there was an expedient resolution to the case that day. And our clients appreciated it because they were able to read the police report. They were able to have me go out in the hallway and speak to the witnesses who were present, ready to testify. And so those law enforcement officers, those witnesses, those victims already are called to court, believing they're going to be in open court in the preliminary hearing. And we were able to resolve cases. And so I want to put that on the record. I do want to respect the time, and I do want to end.
Representative Barker?
Thank you. So I mentioned before the young girl who's been molested. She turns 18, has to testify. How does this bill make it better for the victim who then has her voice, emotional voice recording, right, handed over to the defense so that right, the defense and the other guy can sit down? And how does that help?
Representative Barker, that's a great question, and I do appreciate the question. I guess what I want to do is I want to clarify what the bill says. In the case of a true bill, meaning there's been an indictment, in that case, the audio recording, digital file, goes over the defense attorney. They're not allowed to give that to the defendant. They do review it, and they talk about the substance of what the information is. In the case of a non-true bill, in the public servant exception, that's when a transcript, if it could be, it could be requested. But the main difference here is that the audio of the victim or the witness is not going to the public.
No, it's not going to the defendant. Why wouldn't it?
It goes to the defense attorney, but not to the defendant.
He never plays it in front of the person.
And so my understanding is that we are that defense attorneys will not be handing over these files. That's my understanding.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Your testimony. And last up, Michelle Branham.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Stark. I'm so sorry. There was one. I have two sentences.
Quickly.
My understanding is in Marion County, and this has been based on my conversations with the executive director of Marion County Public Defender's Offices, they have a policy where most cases are have what's called waiving preliminary hearing. The DA's office in this county doesn't actually even go to grand jury on many cases. And so the grand jury process isn't always used, and preliminary hearings don't happen because in order to get quick deals and police reports up front, defense attorneys are waiving. And so there are a lot of processes that are being talked about that are already expedient.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I think a lot of this depends upon the various counties and who the district attorney or and the courts and what have you, you know, recognizing that all counties do not operate the same.
Absolutely.
And since you mentioned mine, which is one of the great ones.
Oh, it's a lovely place, and I enjoy it, and I believe I'm actually your constituent as of recently, a lease signing. So thank you, Senator Winters.
Yeah. All right, last one. Come on up.
Thank you.
We still have one more bill to go after this committee.
I will stick to my 2 minutes. Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I'm going to talk to you briefly about how I believe this bill will affect Lincoln County. I am a mid-sized county. I've been the elected DA for about 3 years, but I've been trying cases for about 14 years, and I know this process inside and out. And what I'd like to do is speak to you specifically as to how I believe that it will affect my county. Right now, I have just about 1,000 hours of grand jury. It takes me 2 full days.
Your name for the record, please.
Oh, very sorry. Michelle Branham, elected DA. Hi, Senator. For Lincoln County. Right now, I've approached this in a way to explain to you how 505 will fall out in my county, and I don't know how this will actually be funded. It's an expensive process. I'm worried about continuing allocations. I'm not one of the initial group, but I can tell you the equipment that I can foresee needing for this process is expensive, and I'm hoping for, if this is passed, how we will explain ongoing funding. I would need to employ a clerk to complete these tasks, to learn recording, copying to servers, filing with the court. In anticipation for my testimony here, I spoke with my IT department. They expected that even to record these, I will need an $18,000 server, $12,000 for equipment, and a computer that I already have in my grand jury room, but I would need around $5,000 in software of some sort in order to be able to record these and provide them to the courts. We have a grand jury that is set up for 2 days a week. They last for 2 months, and I can't even get my grand jurors to agree to be the note taker, let alone be responsible for this very important task. I think it's integral that this not be messed up when it is mandated, and I don't want the DAs to be responsible if we have a malfunction. I can tell you in Lincoln County, we have a large population of retirees who will not be comfortable with any kind of technology. Most of my grand jury is, I wouldn't want to talk about the demographics, but I can tell you they don't even like to use their cell phones. And I can tell you having this be their responsibility troubles me. It would require 4 people per session to be trained on this, electronic devices. I would need 2 recorders and 2 backup recorders for people who fall ill. And again, lots of them will not be technology savvy. I can explain a little bit about some of the comments that were made earlier.
We do need to wrap up. We still have one more bill to work.
And I know they said that I was going to go on. I just wanted to address Senator Winter's comment about having a reaction to going to preliminary hearings. My purpose in going to preliminary hearings was to be protecting victims, nothing more. I don't want to have the defense attorneys in Lincoln County having another crack at these victims to say, maybe you forgot to mention X, Y, and Z. They would use it for impeachment testimony, and I think brutally, and I would oppose the way it is written now. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. On that note, we are going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 505A.
Yes.
And I was just informed that we are now expected to move this bill today, so we will open a work session on Senate Bill 505A. And Senator Winters.
Co-Chair Stark, I move the adoption of the Dash 13 amendments to Senate Bill 505.
Co-Chair Winters moves the adoption of the Dash 13 amendments to Senate Bill 505. As we open for discussion, I do want to apologize. It's been a moving target throughout the afternoon whether or not this paperwork was actually ready, and it has been within the last couple minutes that we were informed, yes, paperwork is appropriately prepared to move it forward. So, other discussion? Seeing none, any objections to the amendments? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move Senate Bill 505 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Winters moves Senate Bill 505 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Are there objections? Please note Representative Barker. All right, so moved. And we will close our work session on Senate Bill 505A and open a... Oh, yes, I need to assign chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. She wants 235.
So
I would imagine that...
Przonski and Williamson.
And Williamson.
Give it to Williamson for a full.
And Williamson for a full.
Thank you.
And so we are closing our work session on Senate Bill 505A and opening a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2797A. Correct? I think. Went like this. Now we have a huge lineup of Mr. Lemon to testify. Would you like to introduce the bill?
I can do that very quickly.
Mr. Bender will introduce this bill to us.
House Bill 2797 increases presumptive fines for violations by $5, effective on January 1st of 2018. It increases the amount of the fine that goes to the criminal fine account before other distributions by that same $5. It also allows the criminal fine account monies to include allocations to the State Court Technology Fund. The bill is intended to provide additional revenue to the Judicial Department for Technology Services support, specifically for POP 404 approved in the legislatively adopted budget. It's expected to generate $3.11 million in the current biennium and $4.15 million next biennium when it is in effect for the full 24 months. I do want to comment that absent any further legislative action, these additional funds would go into the general fund. However, it is the intent in moving this bill to include a allocation from the criminal fines account of the amount of the increase, $3.11 million, to OJD for these purposes. That has to be done in a separate bill, though, so it's not included here.
Co-Chair Stark, I move House Bill 2797 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Wow, that was so eager. However, we still do have a public hearing with Mr. Lemon.
Oh, Mr. Lemon, do you want to add something to this?
Mr. Coach, I would just say that even with this increase, the fines are still below the level. I know the legislature is concerned about the fine levels and for violations. They're still well below the level in 2012 when the legislature...
I mentioned who you were. Would you put your name
on the
record?
I'm sorry, Senator. For the third time today, I'm Phil Lemon from the Oregon Judicial Department. I forget we're cutting and pasting. Excuse me.
We're forgetting lots of things.
That concludes my testimony. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Madam Co-Chair.
Well done, we have questions for Mr. Lemon. And since I opened them both at the same time, I believe we have a motion on the table. Co-Chair Winters moves House Bill 2797 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so moved.
And we already included this in the budget.
Let's go ahead and let Senator Winters, hold on just a second, don't leave. Senator Winters to full and Senate floor, and any volunteers, one of you two? Peluso will carry it to the House floor. And on that note, any other business? I do have further business right here, so don't leave. What's that? We do still have, we will have a meeting tomorrow.
At what time?
I believe it's 11.
I think it's 11 a.m.
It's 11:30.
I think we're on the floor.
But we will get in touch.
We cleared it with the chambers. Basically, we're going to come in, move a bill that we heard today,
okay,
and go out.
Okay.
But we had to wait on paperwork.
But before we leave, we
do have one more thing, but I will formally adjourn so we don't have to record all this. All right, we are adjourned.
And John, if there will.
So.
John, if there will.
So. All right, we are adjourned.